Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of things going on this morning. I'm going to try to answer all of your questions. We got to talking about grass, and it's an interesting subject, grass, because most people just want to know how to mow it, or what fertilizer to put on it, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And we only think there's four or five species of grasses, and we live, Mobile is one of the great centers of grass diversity in North America. I mean, there are thousands of species of grasses that grow here. Now, let me be clear, a lot of those grasses don't like growing in your lawn. And who would want to grow in your lawn? I mean, you're out there mowing the thing every 4 or 5 days. You're absolutely miserable doing it. I mean, it's just a very not very pleasant place to live. So, you know, but there are all these other great grasses, and they're so wonderful. And it's really nice to think about them sometimes and think about how important they are to us. One of the reasons we've lost so many birds, if you're a bird watcher and you want to see birds, find them a native grassland where the grasses grow waist high and where the wildflowers are abundant, and you will be dumbfounded. I mean, those areas are now so rare that the birds just, I mean, they just like say, oh my gosh, this is how it's supposed to be, and they're there by the gajillions. It's amazing. It's an amazing sight. I see it all over. You want to understand what happened to quail? My friends, it wasn't the fire ants. It wasn't the raccoons. It wasn't the deer eating the tops off the eggs. Oh, my goodness. We would blame everything and everybody except ourselves for what happened to quail. We killed quail by turning great, beautiful grasslands into golf courses. Even if we didn't play golf there, we treated them like they were golf courses, mowing them all the time. Can we talk about how beautiful, though, these grasslands can be and how important they could be to us? We're beginning to discover them in all sorts of new ways. They're important to hunters. It's really important that hunters understand our native grasslands and how diverse they are. That's all great. We've had some great discussions this morning. But it's great all around for all of us. We're going to really discover how important these grasses are. I love grasses. So I got a caller who sent me a picture, or who was on, and I said, send me a picture of your grasses. And because they weren't growing, she had a lawn grass. And it was only, you know, she didn't know what it was. It didn't matter. And she said, but it's not growing here. Well, let me just say, imagine that you wanted to live somewhere and somebody kept running over you with a car. Tell me how happy you would be about that. Let me tell you, grasses, no long grass is going to take the traffic of a car and frequent running over. Even if that running over is once, it's not concrete. The ground isn't concrete. The ground compresses. The ground gets dense. It gets compressed, and it gets so compressed that roots can't penetrate it. And that's what's happened. You've created a driveway, of sandy driveway. That's fine if that's what you want to do is drive on it. I wouldn't expect grass to grow there though. And that looks to me to be most of the problem. There is some shade issues as well. There's not much shade, but the ground is very compacted. Now, if you decide, okay, I'm not going to drive on this anymore, ever, then you can say, okay, let's break this soil up and let's try to grow grasses there. But if you're going to drive over it, to get the boat out of the house, to turn the car around, you're just not going to be able. You're not going to be able to grow grasses in that place. So call me about it. We can talk about it. But I think it's the driving. Dean, you wouldn't like being driven over either, would you? So I know we've got some callers. Who's our first caller? Who is our first caller there? Bob, what kind of grapes have you got?
Hey, buddy. I don't know.
How are you
doing? Just went to, I don't know if it was Lowe's, Home Depot, and I bought a couple of blueberry bushes and some scuppernons, and I don't know if I'm some blackberries, and they're growing, they're green, but I'm getting no fruit. It's been about maybe, 2 months, and am I trying to push it?
Yes, sir. Can I give you a simple answer? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So let me tell you, you don't want any fruit the first year on any of those plants. If you do get fruit on those plants the first year, it's going to stress them to the point that they won't get established.
Oh,
so no, absolutely not. Most fruits,
I love banana trees. So my wife did some Googling and said banana trees love old coffee grounds, so I've been putting that on them. But, you know, you only make one pot a day, and I got about 20
bananas. That's right.
So,
that's pretty slim pickings.
The leftover coffee, the liquid, would that do any good?
No. I mean, it ain't going to help. It's not going to hurt. So there's nothing miraculous about coffee grounds. It's just you happen to have them, and they do some service. But certainly they're not. There's nothing magical about them. Your banana trees will love having lots of potassium. The best source of that is going to be fireplace ashes. It makes a huge difference if you can find good fireplace ashes that's just burned down wood. Put that around your banana trees. They'll love it. They will need some nitrogen as well, and there's not enough nitrogen in coffee grounds to make any difference, particularly for a big plant like a banana. So you're going to need to find some nitrogen from some source. But mulching around it helps. Adding fireplace ashes is incredibly beneficial. And the third thing is you're going to need a little bit of nitrogen. You could use cottonseed meal just to cut to the chase. And just put some cottonseed meal around that banana, and it will really appreciate it. You're kind of starving it with the coffee grounds.
All right, good deal. All right, man, thank you for being here.
All right, you're welcome. Good. So, have we got any time left? Oh, it's 13. I got Vanna. Is Vanna next? Yeah, Vanna. Let's talk, and we may have to break, and I'll let you know. But let's get started on this. What's up?
Oh, you told me to call again this week about the waist-high azaleas that you were going to check with your friend who grows them.
Oh, dear me. And I forgot to do it. Could I forget the name of this azalea?
Okay.
Vanna, you ought to shoot me.
It's all right.
What a terrible thing. You know what I'm going to do, Vanna? I'm going to, inside my head, there is a file drawer. And I've got to walk through a few halls to get there, but I'm going to walk through a few halls during the next advertising break, and I'm going to find that file drawer, and in that file drawer, in my head, is the name of this azalea, and I'm going to remember it in the next 15-minute break, and we're going to talk about it.
Okay. That's all right. Okay. It was a white one, and where can I buy it, and if there's a website to look at it, and that's okay.
Yes,
too,
ma'am.
Where can I get it, mainly?
Yep, and I think the Mobile Botanical Garden is going to be your best bet. I think they have it, but I'm going
to
try to check on that.
Really? Oh, exciting. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, but you need the name, and I got to – so it's up a couple of stairs in my head, so I got two flights of stairs.
Okay,
I got to go
up.
Okay,
well, I'll just keep listening, and you tell it,
yep.
and I'll hang up.
Yep, and it's in that file drawer, so I'm going to go
looking
for it. All right. Thank you, Vanna. Isn't that bad? I told Vanna to call me back this week, and I said I would figure it out, and I didn't do it. Goodness gracious, what a terrible thing. If I got into all the images that we need, somebody asked me, is this an amaranth? And it's up around Columbus, Mississippi. It is indeed an it's in the amaranth family. It's pigweed. Pigweed is the name we give to that. It's kind of edible, but it's pigweed, and it's in the amaranth family. It's amaranthaceae. But you kind of, it's good. You got it right. Pigweed, wild pigweed. Grows everywhere. Hey, we'll be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that is where all become tiptoe.
Through the two lips with me. Just to irritate me. Hey, All right, that's enough. So, Vanna, if I'm huffing and puffing, it's because I just ran up two flights of stairs and down a long hall and finally found the room. And then I went in and found the and then I found the card file. And right there in the card file, I thumbed through it very quickly and I found the name. Heaven help us. That took me a while. Irish Cream. Irish Cream, Vanna, is the name of the white azalea that I highly recommend for you. I love Irish Cream. It is a great bloomer. It is a stunning bloomer. It's a great doer. It does really well. It's a vigorous plant, but it only gets, you know, somewhere between knee-high and waist-high. Very easy to trim. Just a beautiful plant. A great plant. I just can't say more good things about it. You will enjoy it. The blooms fall free, which is a nice thing. Irish Cream, C-R-E-A-M in this case. Irish Cream. Martin Vandergeesen propagates that, but he's a wholesaler. And but if you call the Mobile Botanical Gardens, oh, I don't know whether they're going to like me for saying this or not, but I'm going to say it. Just call them and see what's and say, look, would you get me this Irish Cream azalea? Because Bill Finch is still talking about him, and he found him in the card file. And would you please get me the Irish Cream azaleas from Martin Vandergeesen? And they can get them for you. Right now, the Mobile Botanical Gardens is selling things online for you to pick up on certain days, which is a great way to do it. So you don't have to wait for the fall plant sale, I don't think, to have this happen. But call them and see what they say and see if it works. Irish Cream, what a great small white azalea. I don't know why the Irish didn't come to me. I'm kicking myself, but there it is, Irish Cream. Whew. Boy, that was a lot of work, Vanna. But I'm glad you asked. It's a great plant. We shouldn't forget it. It'll be great for your yard, Irish Cream. Let's see. What else have I got? Not driven, the boat is pulled out into the driveway. White car is temporarily parked. We see the bumper, but does not forward. So I think that what we've got, though, is compacted soil, and we're going to have to sort of look at that. We also have a tree problem. So I'm going to come back to these pictures here in just a minute, and we're going to talk about it. But boy, does it look like compacted soil. And I think it is. And it doesn't take many times with sandy soil. I mean, I'm telling you, just driving over it once when it's wet can end up compacting sandy soil to the point that it's very hard to deal with. So I think that's contributing. I also think the shade is contributing. But I can guarantee you the soil is compacted. If, and the shade is contributing. So let me come back to it. I'm going to come back to it. I'm going to think about it just a little bit harder and think about it. But you got to, those sandy soils, we think of them as very open, but they compress very easily when they're wet, and they don't uncompress. And so you just stomp them together, and it makes it very hard. If you were to take a shovel, I bet you'd have a hard time digging in that. You'd hit a hard pan. There's going to be a hard pan that's 3 inches down, and you're going to say, oh, man, this is some kind of tough clay. It's not. It's just sand. But it's been compacted, and that's the problem. You can crack that. You can break it now. You can take a garden fork, and you can just wiggle it in, crack it, and then put something on top of it. If you've got enough sun, you can put sod, like, you know, grass sod. If you don't have enough sod, sun, you're probably going to need to go with something else, like maybe the lily turf again. So we'll look at that, and I'm going to come back to it. I want to be as fair to that situation as I can be. Let's see if it is like concrete. And it's because people have pulled over it. Maybe they're not using it all the time, but that's what's happened. It's just incredibly hard packed. So you can break it. And once you break it, it's going to grow things again really well. Call me back if you want to talk about it, and we'll see how we do now that we know a little bit more about it. Was there another caller after Vanna? Bill, I'm listening. What's up?
I was the fellow that called last week about azaleas too, and I did whack them back. Or I should say prune them back, and I think I'm going to take your advice. You had mentioned a low-growing azalea, and I think it's that Irish cream you might have been talking about. So I'm going to wait till the fall and then see. But I have other questions, and one is regarding grass. And when I first moved here, it seems that the predominant grass in my area is the St. Augustine. And I was on a pursuit of... St. Augustine seed. And everybody, to a man or a woman, says, well, you can't buy seed. You can only buy plugs or sod. And my question is, why is that?
You really want to know? They're
yes,
telling
I
you
do,
the truth.
And I have a feeling I know, but go ahead.
Yeah, so plants are different than people. We don't make clones of ourselves very well. I mean, you know, there's been movies about it where we made clones of Hitler, but that was all made up. So we don't really clone ourselves. However, plants have retained the ability to clone themselves, and it happens all the time with some plants. They will produce exact replicas of themselves. St. Augustine is one of those grasses that is capable of producing exact replicas of itself and spreading by rhizomes. And you can actually tear pieces of roots apart, and you get two different plants that are basically identical. They're clones. Huh. So cloning is how we propagate most warm season grasses. And there's a good reason for that. Because if you've ever had a warm season grass that was good about flowering and producing seed, it will drive you absolutely insane. Because it will flower... It will go to flower every 4 days. A great example of that is Bahia grass. Uh-huh. And people who have Bahia grass, they just want to cry because they'll go mow the yard. The wife says, or the husband says, you got to go mow the yard. And they go out and mow the yard. And 3 days later, it's back again. And the spouse says, I thought I told you to mow the yard. So the reason warm season grasses, because they will repeatedly flower, we have tended to get away. We've selected for warm season grasses that propagate only by clones so that we don't have to deal with those seed heads all summer long. Cool season grasses are slightly different. I won't go into the details. Cool season grasses, you can grow from seed because they tend to flower only once, and it tends to be at the end of a long period of growth, so you don't have to mow the seed heads all the time. That is not true for warm season grasses like St. Augustine. So there you go.
All
you
right.
can get centipede from seed. It has a seed head problem, but I will tell you that centipede is the worst grass for any lawn. And trying to get it started from seed is really a miserable thing. So you definitely want to go with sod if you're going to do it. Now, if you've got any St. Augustine grass in your yard, I'm very cautious about telling you to go get sod because St. Augustine spreads like crazy. And you give it the right conditions, and it'll spread and take over. So,
well, what I have been doing is where my new garden is going to go, there's a lot of St. Augustine, and I've been taking plugs out of that and plug it into the areas that need grass. And
oh my gosh, you're a mad scientist. You're doing cloning all over your yard.
Well, there you go, and it seems to be working. The grass is taken. You know, I put a little admixture to it and trying to get the soil a little healthy because there's a lot of clay. But after a couple of weeks, the plugs I put in seem to be established, so I'm real happy about that.
That's right. So you're doing it the right way. So plugs are a great way to do it if you've got the patience, and you do, and you're doing it right. And you're doing it exactly right. It's going to be just fine. You're doing great.
Do I have the time for another question?
Yeah, let me tell you one thing about the azaleas, real quickly. It's not just Irish cream. There are a bunch of others. And so when you're ready this fall to plant those, there are a bunch of small azaleas, dwarf azaleas. And we're going to have that catalog file ready in my head. I'm going to be standing over it. And when you call me this fall when you're ready to plant, which will be a great time to plant, we're going to talk about all those azaleas, okay?
All right. I'll try to be real quick. I moved here from Southern California. I lived up in the mountains in San Diego County for about the past 25 or 30 years. And, of course, there's no such thing as garden up there because too rocky and tremendous pine.
So here's our problem. I just ran into the break. Can you hold on? Just hold on.
Yes, I can.
Just a second.
I sure can.
I ran into a break. And that's okay. We're gonna come back from it.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Having a good time talking about different things. I have a picture of a wild pea, that I should be able to tell you the genus of right off the top of my head, and I can't, and I'm now going through my keys trying to find that, and I'm going to work on that. I hope to have it. If I don't have it this show, you call me back next show, and we'll try to figure it out. Sometimes the breaks don't give me enough time to go through the keys or walk through all of the halls in my head to try to find the name of this thing, but we're going to find it for you. We're going to find it for sure. Bill, you still there?
I am.
So you asked one last question, and I start over again. So you were telling
back where I moved from, we had a lot of blackberries, and we harvested them and cleaned them and froze them and had them all year round. Here I bought a house with a very large yard, and behind me is a jungle of right-of-way, which I like very much. And you're right, the amount of birds in the air is phenomenal. And in that jungle are great big stands of blackberries, which I thought this is going to be great, but of course the birds beat me to it every time. But my problem is the blackberries sprout up everywhere at my house, in the lawn, in the bushes, well, you name it. And they seem to be very hardy. How do you control them? Oh, is that a good luck?
Get a glove.
Yes.
Get a glove and pull. So the birds are the birds that love those, and actually they're almost certainly where you are. They're almost certainly dewberries, what we call dewberries. They're more vining. You notice they're not erect like the blackberries you're probably used to from California. They're more vining. They kind of lay out and grow through like prostrate vines. They spread out like that, and so they're dewberries, and they love sun. I mean, they are desperate for sun. They actually don't like being back in the woods. They actually prefer sun. Uh-huh. So they're really gonna do well germinating in your yard. So and birds are doing their business. You know what I'm saying? And so every time they do their business, they have created the perfect little packet for seed germination in your yard. And so all of those, and so I will tell you quite honestly, having lived after 25, how many years? A long time, more than 25 years in Mobile. I can tell you that you're never going to eliminate the dewberries. It's something you do. You just pull every year, every now and then, and about once. Well, you probably need to do it twice a year. you just put a little, put some gloves on, and you go pull.
Okay.
And
are you saying dewberries or dewberries?
D-E-W, as in the morning dew.
Got it.
What falls? The morning dew, dewberries, they're called, and but they tend to be spreading in prostate, but they're prostrate, excuse me, but they're very similar to blackberries, and they can have a very good flavor. A lot of people were commenting about how good the flavor was on the dewberries this year, and your birds apparently thought so too. So, but there are a lot of they're good to pick when you can find a lot of them. They're just not as erect, and that makes them a little harder to manage. But there is no secret, because you will always get dewberry seeds, and they will germinate in the least little bit of sunlight.
Well, and just a quick hint for your listeners on gloves. You can go down to Home Depot or Lowe's and buy the fanciest work gloves you want, but boy, I'll tell you what, those barbs will come through it. What I found is the best is those old-fashioned railroad gloves that are the cheapest ones I have, and the best.
That's right. So they got a little leather palm generally with a cotton canvas back,
right.
And that leather palm is thick enough to stop them, and that's a great way of doing it. That's right.
Yeah, then I go to gloves. All right, well, Bill, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Bye.
So David P is the one who's going to count. So you're counting. You're taking Charlie's role on of counting how many times I use the word that delights you. Doesn't it? What birds do with blueberries? So there it is. So Bill, that was good. I hope that helped. Folks, there's some great azaleas. My mind has been on grasses, I'll tell you. So I haven't been in the azalea file drawer recently, but it's not the best time to plant azaleas. But when this fall comes, let's talk about azaleas. Y'all remind me. I'll have all the list of them. We'll talk about them. We'll talk about how to find them. I think the Mobile Botanical Gardens will still be around. Who knows? It's iffy. It's all iffy right now. I just warn you. If they're not here, I don't know what we're going to do about recommending where you buy plants. But at any rate, just we'll talk about those azaleas. They're really cool. Do we have another caller? Tony. I'm listening. Tell me about that soil.
Hey, Bill. You are right. We have driven on that sand some, and I'm currently parking in another area. But that grass has never grown, and it's like concrete.
Yep.
So you were going to tell me the best way to break it up and what's planted.
That's right. So, Tony, good. So, and listen, it does not take much driving to compact it. And so if you ever envision driving a car over it, you might just want to go ahead and make it a permanent area where you don't have a lot of grass. But let me say that if you do it when it's dry, it doesn't have too much of an effect. But it's wet all the time here. And when it's wet, it lubricates those sand grains, and they start moving around, and they get really tight and compacted, and then it's very hard for them to break up. But here's how you break it up if you're ready to do this. And there's no other way to do it. You could take a tiller, and it'll just float over it, and it'll tear it up in a way that makes it compact even worse. So at this point, the best way to do it is to get a garden fork. And you don't want to have to do the whole thing at once. You don't need to do the whole thing at once. But get a garden fork in the areas that it's most important for you to have grass. Do you know what a garden fork looks like?
Yeah, I have one.
Yep, got four tines. They're kind of stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the great thing. You think, gosh, I can't get a shovel into this. But if you take that garden fork, you put your foot on it, you put a little weight on it, and then wiggle it. I'm serious. Wiggle it. It's great for your waistline. Just wiggle it.
I have one of those. I think it's house. I forgot what it's called, but it's like a fork, and you push it down in the ground and you turn it.
No, no.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't think that
works. I have
the
garden fork that you're talking about, but I also
it's the garden fork that you want. Yeah, no, the other thing is for weeds, and it won't get deep enough. You need to get down about 12 inches, and you're not going to get quite that deep. You're probably going to get down about 10 inches with that fork, but that'll be fine.
This is called claw pro.
Yeah, nah, that won't help you much. So put that aside. Don't even think about it. It won't help. But trust me, take that fork and wiggle it down. You just wiggle it, just kind of shake it. It will wiggle itself down into the ground with a little bit of pressure from your foot. And then when you get it down till it's in just as deep as you can possibly get it, lean back. Just lean back on it. And it's going to crack that soil. And that's all you got to do. And then you move about a foot and you wiggle it down again. Lean back and crack it. And once you the first time you crack it, it's going to be kind of hard because it's all compacted together. But once you begin loosening it up, the rest of it becomes a lot easier to crack. Crack that soil. Don't turn it upside down. Don't do anything to it except for cracking it. And then come back with whatever you want to plant on it. If you think you've got enough sun. Well, if you think you've got more than 4 hours of sun, and you've got to have more than 4 hours, you can go with St. Augustine. And I would recommend St. Augustine's sod for that spot. So you can start there, but make sure that you're getting at least 4 hours of sun and preferably 6 hours. And the St. Augustine should do fine there. Here's the other thing I would do. I always recommend this to people because it is sandy and because there's not much organic matter. After you crack it and before you put the sod on, get by pine bark, each piece no bigger than your fingernail, very fine pine bark, and lay it down about 2 inches deep over the area you want to lay the sod. Rake it smooth, water it in, put a little lime on top of that, and then put your sod, and it will make a ton of difference for a lot
of
reasons.
Pine bark and lime.
Pine bark and lime. Now, let me tell you one last thing. It ain't the best time to do this. You can start cracking it now if you want to and make sure you don't walk on it, but you can crack it now. But I would wait until October, late October, to put your sod down. It's a lot easier to do that then, okay?
Okay. All
is that working?
So wait until October and then crack it in pine bark. I've been buying these bags of topsoil at
No.
Lowe's.
It's fake topsoil. I could go into the reasons why it won't work, but topsoil is something that has to be made every day. It's always degenerated, it's always eaten up by soil bacteria, and it's always broken down. So what you want is you want the raw materials for the topsoil, and that raw material in this case is going to be pine bark. And it will last.
Compost.
Yeah, and it will break down too quickly too. The pine bark lasts a lot longer.
Okay.
And I'm gonna end up boring you, and I always am reluctant to do that. But you have to trust me on this. The pine bark is going to work a lot better than the compost, and a gajillion times better than the fake topsoil. So if you delay this, and you may delay it, and you may come back this, and you're going to call me back, and we'll go through it all again. We'll make sure it's done right, and we'll be at just the right time to do it, and we'll get this thing fixed.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Tony. Hey, I hear music. That's a break. We're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I'm trying to catch up with all of my questions. A good one here. Is it possible to grow a pomegranate in Hurley, Mississippi? You betcha. Pomegranates grow really well throughout Alabama and Mississippi. And it's really great, as I point out, it's one of these plants we've kind of lost track of. If you looked in old gardens, particularly in South Alabama and up through the Black Belt, they all had pomegranates. And sometimes they were ornamental pomegranates that just had these beautiful double flowers, because pomegranate flowers are really, really stunning. And you'll still see in some of those old gardens where they hadn't been Walmarted to death, where somebody didn't go in and say, oh, well, if it ain't growing in Walmart, I don't want it, so I'm going to just throw it all out. Oh, help us. Listen, beautiful pomegranates everywhere. They're great. There are so many great varieties. Bobby Green has a great variety that he just calls, I think, Sweet. And it is sweet. It is a great pomegranate. I highly recommend it. I don't know whether Bobby Green has any more stock of it. I hope somebody's can pick that up and is continuing to sell it. It oftentimes the Mobile Botanical Gardens sells it. And it's Bobby Green's cultivar. It's just called Sweet. But here's another place to go looking for pomegranates. And they are very good too. And it's Just Fruits and Exotics. They are very patient with me, I'll have to say. And they'll be very patient with you. They do a great job of growing plants just for the Gulf Coast. They're based in Crawfordville, Florida, but they ship. And right now, I think they're probably out of most of their pomegranates, but they'll be back in stock this fall. And they have got so many different kinds of pomegranates, it'll blow your mind. You can get some really hardy ones, like Afghanski, but you don't have to get the hardiest ones. You can get some of the least hardy ones in Hurley. But just have fun. Look through them. There are some varieties that are sold in nurseries, like Wonderful. Wonderful is anything but wonderful. Whenever you see the name Wonderful, you say, no, it ain't wonderful. It isn't. It won't fruit for you because it just doesn't do well in our humidity, and it's not designed for us. So go to Just Fruits and Exotics or see if you can find Bobby Green's wonderful pomegranate called Sweet. Not called Wonderful. It's called Sweet is what I think Bobby called it, and it's just a great pomegranate. He could have given it a more complicated name, I guess, but look for Bobby Green's cultivar or go to Just Fruits and Exotics. You can get there on the web, justfruitsandexotics.com, justfruitsandexotics.com. Great place to buy a lot of fruiting trees. Have we got any callers left? Did we get to all of our callers? No callers left? Yeah. So we're good. So let's come back and let's just talk again a little bit about Alabama. One of the great centers for grass diversity in the world. We are so boggled by diversity here in Alabama. We have a hard time with it. It's just the irony because we live in the most diverse state in the country, and we've tried forever and ever to simplify it. So we got all this incredible grass diversity, thousands of species. You can name three if you're lucky. And they're all long grasses, and almost none of them are native. Probably none of them are native. And they're all a pain in the patootie. And not worth much. Bermuda grass, it has no value for wildlife. Bahia grass, very little or no value for wildlife. St. Augustine, not good for wildlife at all. Not good for Alabama. So centipede grass, worthless from any perspective. But all these incredible grasses are out there. I'm just enjoying them. Listen, let me tell you what fields used to look like. When birds flocked to those fields, when turkey would flock to those fields and we didn't shoot them out, when quail were so incredibly abundant, when I was a kid, and quail were the focus of life for so many people in the South, and out there on Chillinger's Road, there were so many quail, you wouldn't believe it. You tell me out there on Chillinger's Road how many quail you hear. It's rare. It is incredibly rare. quail have become rare. And the reason they're rare is because we forgot what Alabama looked like. We forgot what a meadow, what a native field in Alabama looked like. It wasn't a golf course. It was this beautiful place where there were so many different kinds of grasses that it's just, it will boggle your mind to understand how many different grasses there were. And it will boggle your mind to know how many different wildflowers there were. Sunflowers and peas and coreopsis. And in the wetter areas, the beautiful pitcher plants and the milkworts. And I could go on and on. Oh, goodness gracious, I am going to go on and on. The beautiful iatris, the feathery-like, plume-like things with all the purple, the incredible vanilla plants growing everywhere with their incredibly fragrant leaves. Smell like vanilla. It's just beautiful. All of these plants I wouldn't bother to name because it would drive you crazy. They were all growing in these meadows all around, and that's what the wildlife fed on. That's what wildlife ate, and that's why they disappeared. So now we used to have quail hunters. Now you only got deer because deer live in suburbs. They can eat your shrubs and everything else. But there was so much other great wildlife. You want to increase your turkey populations? Don't worry about buying some seed mix from Nebraska. Look, you want a green field? Think about what's the native plants. We had the richest assortment of native plants with the greatest protein, greatest feeding capabilities of any green fields with just nothing but the native plants, the stuff that's going to seed in wild. Folks, if you want to know what the best wildlife food for your quail and turkey and deer are, I'm going to give you the Latin name, and next week you can call me back and we'll tell you what it is. It's called Ambrosia trifida. Look it up. It's incredible. It will be the best thing. It's a great native plant, grows really wild. You won't have to worry about it. Understanding those fields, the fields that moved, the fields that were once Alabama, that moved every time the wind blew, that blew around, that were waist high, incredible diversity, incredibly good for wildlife. Let's talk about how to bring a little bit of that back, particularly those of you who have larger parcels, but even those of you who have just small parcels. Let's do it. Don't mow an acre of ground. Good heavens. You got better things to do with your time. Let's talk about how to benefit somebody besides the lawnmower industry. Native grasses. I'm obsessed with them. What a great thing to talk about. Maybe we can talk about them more next week. Hey, it's been fun being with you. We got to go this week, but give me a call next week. We'll get into the details once again about how to make your yard a better place, a place where you can be happier, understanding where we are here on the Gulf Coast. Thanks, folks.
I love big old bees because everything before you get down. On your bending knees, I ain't gonna dig no more taters.